On this episode of AV Week, we talk about a new projector that's entered into the space, talk about whether or not we need a new projector in the AV world, learning from architects what we can learn from the architecture community, and finding what you're good at and staying focused on all that and more. Next on AV Week.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
AV Week is brought to you by our fine group of underwriters, companies like Extron Electronics. This is AV Week, episode 276, recorded Friday, December 9th, 2016. Office Revolution.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing scan.
AV Week.
Online.
This is AV Week. This is AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. My name is Tim Albright. I am your host. Good afternoon, good evening. Whenever you're listening to this fine podcast, thank you so much for doing so. With us this week to talk about all the latest news and information, first and foremost, my compatriot, the left-hand side of my brain, and a very swell human being. His name is George Tucker. How are you, sir?
All right. I was wondering who you were going to describe.
Well, you know. You doing well?
Yeah, I've got a cold. Still fighting it off.
Nah. George was at the Crestron / Sapphire holiday party last night. He's going to be cutting that up and posting that on our page.
Yeah, so. Hey, I had dinner with Marla last week.
Actually. Oh, very good, very good.
We had some drinks. So.
Well, that voice, if you're listening to the podcast, the video is here. His name is Paul Depperschmidt, old friend from Cisco. How are you, sir?
Very good. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And last but not least, a brand newbie. So you two gentlemen, be nice to him. His name is also Paul. Paul Dexter is from JetBuilt. How are you, sir?
Very good. Thank you for having me. Very good.
And I missed Paul, but I found out today that he was at his AVEC doing one of the Homework Express classes at the AV Executive Conference this year in Miami. So heard really good things about that.
Well, thank you for saying that. It was a pleasure to be there, pleasure to be able to volunteer at the event. It's a great event.
Yeah, it's a really great event, and it's one of those that I look forward to. End of the year, it's more business than AV, which is also something that I like a lot. As somebody who runs a small business, I always like learning things from really smart folks. So, all right, let's get this party started. First up and foremost, we're going to talk about a couple different things. But the first thing was an interesting one that came out from our friends over at AV Interactive. A new projector company is on the map, and it's a company called Norse. It's spelled N-O-R-X-E, but you pronounce it Norse. It's from Norway, and it's a group of individuals who are former executives of the company Projection Design. Projection Design was purchased by Barco a couple of years ago. Assuming that there was some sort of NDA and you had to stay with the company for a certain amount of time, they did that, and now they've started this new company. They have one product. They released it at a trade show called IITSEC, which, George, stands for what again?
Oh, gosh, now you're going to make me...
He had it.
Inter-Service Industry Training Simulation and Education Conference.
Okay. Got that? IITSEC. Let's just do that. The product is called the P1 series. They're labeling it as a 4,000 lumens plus projector, solid state, and next gen, quote unquote, LED illumination technology. Now, everything aside, and regardless of what the actual product is itself, and we'll get to that in a second, Mr. Tucker, I'm going to start with you on this. Why do we need another projector in this market?
Do we and don't we? It's I'm wavering on this question.
Okay.
When I first read it, and I knew that this was going to be one of the things you were going to ask. If it's for a highly specialized market and or use, a new projector could be a good thing. And I think that goes along with what they were showing the projector at, this conference for modeling VR, medical, very high resolution, very rugged environment needs. you know, because the medical operating room or medical operating theater is not a very gentle atmosphere for a lot of these things. The fact that they're going to have what they call true solid state, no moving parts, that kind of thing, automatically made me think about my time filming surgeries or joint replacements back in the 90s. You need, you know, biomass impervious. I can't say that. Biomass impervious systems, something that doesn't have a lot of moving parts that'll collect dust or other things. So yes, when you're dealing with a very specialized market, I guess a specific product would work really well. New, not going with anyone else. Will it work? That'd have to really be dramatic, I guess, for me to see any kind of movement. But they seem to have a lot of press on it, although there's nothing on the site. It's a picture, some lovely artsy pictures of the projector standing in hangars.
And the George mentioned the site. There's also nothing about when it ships or how much it is. Those are other two.
Not key. Even a spec sheet.
Yeah, not even a spec sheet. Mr. Depperschmidt, from your standpoint and just looking at the industry in general, because you've been around a while, how do you bust into this market? And understand what I say when I say this market. This is a market, projectors, that people have written about for years about it being commoditized, right? Where margins are going down, prices are going down. How do you get into that market? It's already crowded.
I think you just heard it. It's a specialized thing. If it were me doing it, I'd sure look for a niche that I could fill and that really found a home. I was just looking for it just a minute ago. I was part of a survey or some kind of study that was about projectors from a projector company, and just had the results. I just read it like 2 weeks ago, and I can't find it. I don't know where I put it. But it wasn't a pretty picture for projectors. It was clearly the percentages were way off on the projectors and displays coming way up. So to get into that business takes some guts. I mean, to start from nothing right now, I'd say you're really taking the risk. Better find a really good spot.
Well, I think that's part of it too, is that they must think that they have something great, right? And unique and special. One of the guys that helps me with our business is constantly drilling into my head, you know, what is your unique selling proposition, right? What is your unique position in the marketplace? And according to, you know, their press release and according to the press they got at the trade show, they're kind of specializing, like Mr. Tucker said, on both simulation as well as medical theater. Paul Dexter, you know, when you're bringing stuff like this, and you're talking to, you know, dealers, and you're talking to folks, how do you differentiate yourself from, you know, from the pack?
Yeah, well, you're asking me specifically, maybe referring to how I would do it with my own thing. But I'll tell you what, with this, I love, the space, you know, the medical and the VR is one thing, but how emphasizing the LED and the no moving parts, I think that's the biggest opportunity, because, and I'm no expert in projection, that's for sure, but I do know that everything high power is laser now, and if they can be the leaders in let's build the units that, you know, Disney throws on for environmental architectural projection and do it with LEDs, no moving parts, I think there's a win there. But I believe LED has the power to do that. I think everybody went so fast to laser in the way that everybody went so fast to gasoline when they were playing with electric cars 100 years ago, because it was easier and faster and simpler. I think there's opportunity with LED to do that.
All right, very good.
Not being an expert, but that's
No. You make a really great point. It's something that, you know, I remember 10 years ago when we still had the projection shootouts at Infocom.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one of the things is they were just starting to talk about laser, just starting to talk about LED. Nobody really had great specs. Back then, you couldn't test, quote-unquote, lumens for those technologies. Now they've gotten to the point where they can at least get somewhat close and say that it's 4,000 lumens like, you know, in that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the concerns I have, though, is that they say it's all LED, which doesn't always... I mean, maybe I haven't paid enough attention to LED technology at the moment, but weren't they still having trouble getting above 3,000 lumen for many, many years? And the attraction, I guess, of laser was that it could go way beyond. It just was the green lasers that were really much too expensive to produce. I'm just always me curious.
Well, and some of the issues that they've had, and not to hark on one of my favorite subjects, is OLED, right? Is OLED, and it's not just getting the green, not just getting the LEDs to produce, it's getting the consistency of color in the OLEDs. Right. That's something that they've also had some issues with, specifically talking about OLEDs, not net LED consistency in the color, but OLEDs are having some issues with getting consistency. So, mm-hmm. Which may be why, you know, I still haven't gotten an LED or an OLED projector or display. All right. I'm still learning Zoom here, guys. So hang on for a second. For that next story is all about ISE. We'll be heading there in about 2 months' time. It's in Amsterdam, Integrated Systems Europe. One of the things that that they do really, really well is not just the combination of residential and commercial AV, but also a lot of the speakers that they bring in are really good. Last year they had Dr. Mikio Kaku, that Mr. Tucker and I got to interview beforehand, talking about technology and future casting in general. This year they're taking a little bit different approach. They're bringing in a gentleman by the name of Ole Schirin. And Ole is an architect. He's an award-winning architect. If you go to his Wikipedia page, I believe he has an award for every year for the last 10 years. So, not too shabby, right? The one thing I want to tackle here, and Mr. Debrishman, we'll start with you on this. You deal a lot with connecting businesses and you know, not just architects and specifically, but integrators and helping them, you know, get up and running in IT. What can we learn, not just from this gentleman here, but from the architecture company or the architecture industry in general, that we can apply to AV?
Well, I'll look at it from maybe a little different than what you were asking for, which was we have some people on our team that are focused in on the facilities workplace transformation and the idea that the way that these buildings are built are going to change based on the way people work. So I've got a few stats here from like $22 billion square feet of office real estate worldwide, you know, that you're looking at working and probably changing. And it's the cost, you know, per employee and everything is really interesting. Like 15 billion connected devices, two networked per capita, connected 2 billion people and machines.
Good night.
This is where we're headed. And I think the architects are looking at it from a standpoint of how can you get the most for your, you know, return on your investment, I guess you would say, for building these new buildings and outfitting these new spaces based on how people are going to work. And we see a lot more that the agile teams, the way that people are going to be kind of spread all over the place, but still work together. And it's not the cubicle based structure that we've had in the past, much more freewheeling. And you've got to build buildings based on that. And that's where I would start it. There's some other things I could say, you know, our relationships with Apple, for instance, and what we're doing with the networks to allow people to kind of use the networks for their phones and be able to instantly kind of set up to the network are all things to consider, you know, as you move forward. So there's a lot going on in it. I have one of the guys on our team was saying it's the biggest revolution in the office space since the 60s.
Why is that?
You know, you can see a massive change. Just mainly because of the way people work, distributed workplace, you know, the flexibility that we're looking for now in these workspaces. And, you know, let's work-life balance, trying to retain talent, you know, that especially the younger talent and trying to give them a facility that they like. So the idea is that they're going to do massive changes in how we use offices. We're starting to see it in a lot of our offices. Some of them are still kind of the same, you know, you walk in and there's just cubicle after cubicle, but you're starting to see a lot of the open space ideas and no one has an actual office, you know, and so you go in and kind of just use a space for a little while. And you got to think about that from, you know, from an AV perspective, from a network perspective and all that. How do I keep people productive and not have them locked down to a spot?
And that's some of not to overly use a buzz term, but it's of the flex spaces, right? The right. Flex rooms, huddle spaces. I think a couple of years ago is when we started talking about that, where it's not a dedicated space necessarily for X, Y, or Z. It's a place where people can go. like Paul said, use for a few minutes and then, you know, move on with their workday. Mr. Dexter, from your standpoint then, how do we take, you know, what, you know, Mr. Depperschmidt was talking about with this office revolution and help our integrators not just talk the talk with their clients, but help them solve some of these problems?
Well, yeah, I had a whole bit done outside of that, more on this architect, the architect interaction within the AV community.
Yeah. So
to your exact question, I think I'm less prepared. I think let me try to bridge the two.
Yeah.
I think that AV integrators have so many ways they're so technical, and they need to work with the architect, they need to work with the general contractors and engineers, but they don't embrace working with the architects as much as I believe they should. And I'm talking in both ways, both aesthetically, because I feel in 2016, I see too many things bolted on after the fact, when that should never be the case. You know, nothing inside of a car is bolted on. It's completely integrated now, to such a degree that you can't even change your car stereo anymore. But I think there's great value there. And I think that that's aesthetically. And then, of course, on the technology side, same should apply. There could be far more deeper integration from our systems into the buildings if we engage further. And I will say this, in my years of integrating, I cannot count on two hands or on a handful of hands the projects that I won based on my interaction with the architect early. Because, and again, part of it is because my love for architecture, and I aspired to be an architect, you know, during my high school years, architect or rock star, and I couldn't decide which, so I jumped into rock star, which blew a lot of years of my life. But I loved it so much that's how I got, you know, a lot of my early AV gigs were like for Hillstone Group, Houston's restaurant. They're so architecturally designed that I won those systems because of the integration, you know, highlighting our systems where they should be highlighted, hiding them when they should be hidden. And I just think there's great value there. I loved it.
Well, and just to take off on what you said, because that's a huge point. When I was an integrator, when I was working with programming house for a few years, one of the things that we tried to do was we tried to get in, like you said, with the architect early on. We did AIA classes. It's one thing that the AIA, that's the institute, that's the Infocom version of architects. They have where they have to renew their version of their CTS every year, right?
Yeah.
They have to get so many points every year, and so we would provide education. It was education selling, basically, where you would go in, you would say, you know, here's renewal credits for your AIA, and then you start a conversation that way. Paul Dexter, from your standpoint, how do you do that? How did you specifically get involved with architects early on?
Yeah, I honestly, and I wasn't, you know, my years, I wasn't doing a lot of open bids and you know, it was almost all commercial, but it was a lot of mega churches and a lot of restaurant groups, because I had both of those, you know, perpetuate from Hillstone Group to, and from a mega church, that kind of perpetuated those two avenues for me. So every time I would be approached by, usually by a client, not by a builder, I would then get a set of drawings. I see who's the architect, and I just start calling them. I just start communicating, and because I knew that there's so much has been missed, you know, especially in those two fields, because house of worship, even on the big scale, it's not done the way you know, theme parks and airports and everything else that's really being done properly. We would all probably say, in the sense of a true architectural consultant, you know, or AV consultant designing the systems. A lot of times it's left for, we'll deal with tech later. Well, I try to then nestle myself in and essentially become that consultant role. And then by the time they talk to a handful of other people, I it's too late. I'm already the consultant. I got to kind of do the gig. So
yeah.
It wasn't a hack strategy. It was just came out of my passion, but it became a hack strategy later. So yeah, I just literally would hack my way into the architect and just start calling and emailing them, praising them for their work, because usually I'd be like blown away by the building. I can't wait to work on this project. And what a beautiful, this literally just happened 2 weeks ago. As I'm spinning off my AV company, I still get calls, and I'm talking to this architect in Colorado Springs going, this is the most beautiful church I've seen. And so next thing I know, I've got this gig I wasn't even looking for, because I bloated up the architect.
Yeah. Very nice. All right, Mr. Tucker, let's wrap all this thing up. One thing about architecture, they do, Paul mentioned that there's a fair amount of technical, but there's also a fair amount of art to architecture, right? How do we get these folks together? You know, you've got engineers, and I love my engineer friends, but they're awfully technical, right? And so they're not so artsy. So how do we get these two groups together?
Well, that's part of my argument, as I've written about a lot, is about vocational education is one thing, but having a general liberal arts education actually helps all of this, because you understand these things. But I mean, let's take a step back for 1 second. What are the architects doing that we're also doing? We're not just remote control. We're environmental control, whether that's just audio or it's the visual, but we're now into lighting and shades and thermostats. And all of that works with what the architects need to do in these modern buildings. As was mentioned previously, that it's about non-offices. It's about moving through the day. It's about circadian rhythms. It's about bioluminescence. It's about the things that ResiWeek has been covering in the last two episodes. Mm-hmm. We are really part of that complete environmental control. And in that, we have to work with the architect and know a little bit about what they need. It's beyond, I think, just the art, or we can't have bumps on the walls for the Wi-Fi or other objects. It's really about making that space, especially on the commercial side, work to a work day. Whether you're in the Northeast and it gets dark early and you need to keep that level of blue light, or you know, whatever that warm temperature, that light temperature you need to have all day long, it really does matter. We just did a show on Lightcast with these guys who do bioluminescence, circadian rhythm systems in lighting that changes throughout the day and actually measures the average light and the light temperature throughout the day and what you need of each light temperature throughout your day to be most productive. So that's what we're in. And it really does come down to that sort of,
how do you do that?
What?
The measure how much light you need throughout the day.
They've done studies. They're quoting sort of these large treatises and doctorate papers on what kind of light at what time of day do we need, since we're indoors most of the time, but we evolved to be with the luminescence of the sun, obviously, and that's a certain temperature, warmth, color. You know,
and that temperature changes throughout the day, obviously, because
And that does with circadian rhythms and things like that. Again, I advise people to go back and look at some of the last four or five episodes of Lightcast, where they're talking to people about this kind of stuff. It's really the big deal in lighting and in architecture.
And not to make too fun of a point of it, because understand I'm an old programmer. How you do that, kids, is through programming and automation. Yep. You still need a programmer for that.
What I think was brought up before, though, these are all good things, but if you're not in there in the front end, that's the big trick. You know, if you can't get in there when they're having these discussions, you know, you're behind the bus. Yeah. And so part of what I was leaning towards with our facilities change and the way that those are, that's how we're doing it at Cisco, because we have to stay in front of that, you know, and you can't kind of be waiting until everything's done and then try to figure out how to get involved. So you get involved in it by, I think you were just mentioning ago, you appeal to what they're interested in and not necessarily what we think is the most important. And we kind of strut in there and say, you got to do it this way. You lure them in with things that they're going to have interest in, like the lighting, like the room layouts, like the huddle room type things and how people are going to use it, and help them with facilities discussions, you know, and come in there and really kind of talk their talk. And they'll end up pulling you in a little earlier, I think, to the whole process. So we do that a lot with customers, you know, in the very early days. And so they have facilities management that is in their job is to, you know, we have a new building being built. We're going to design it, and you get in there in the very front end. That's the hard part, but that's the important part.
Well, it also comes down to a little bit of biz dev, Paul, because as a manufacturer or as an integrator, getting in on the front end is incredibly important, because you're right. You start having those conversations and you start producing value and bringing value to that client. they may not have a project right here today, but they'll have one in a month, or they'll have one in 2 months. And I say, you know what? Paul was talking to me about this. Let me give him a call and see what he has to say.
Yeah. And partnering helps as well. So a lot of times a small AV company has got their work cut out getting in the front end of that discussion. They're just, you know, they're pushed down in the stack so far. And we have a lot of our AV integrators now that are kind of working with larger, what would you call it, data VAR type, type companies. And so they are brought in to those discussions because of the relationship the data VAR might have. Which is kind of, it's a whole nother discussion. We could have a day's talking about that, but the way that whole market has changed, the way it's kind of settled itself out. It's really interesting to watch, but they've created these relationships where the person who is in the front end is pulling in an AV integrator and saying they need to be at the table with me, to have these discussions.
Yeah. And having those partnerships, you're right. Having those partnerships and the people who recognize the value of that is incredibly important.
Right.
Yeah, all right.
A lot of that's happening.
Last story here before I let you guys get out of here. This comes from us from our old friend Tom LeBlanc from Commercial Integrator. Tom interviewed a lot of different folks. One of them was Chuck Wilson. And Chuck says in the piece that the integrators today need to be great at one or two things and stay focused on those things to be successful. Tom's writing about a bunch of different things, a lot of mergers and acquisitions that happened this year. Diversified picked up a company. AVISPL was purchased by an investment firm and has turned around the last week or so and purchased another integrator out in California, which Paul Dexter's way. So I want to ask you guys specifically, and Mr. Dexter, we'll start with you on this. How do you figure out what you're good at? And you mentioned the fact that you kind of focused on restaurants and house of worship. How do you get to that point where you're like, okay, this is my one or two things that I can focus on?
Well, yeah, that's tricky, and I think after the Great Recession, we all, you know, when so many commercial guys got into residential, so many residential guys got into commercial because they're just trying to pay the bills, you know, and most of these companies. I failed at this, you know, clearly. When I dabbled in residential, it was a disaster, you know. I mean, you know, I'm mostly just helping my buddies, you know, who with their home system. But it's so different, as we all know. And it's so tough to get right when you jump lanes. So I don't know that you have to go out and explore what you're good at, though. I think that is where you started. You know, I think the bigger problem is how do you not think that the grass is greener by getting in, you know, to this other area or by getting into, you know, shades and architectural lighting and so many things because it's extremely tempting because when you have more and more clients saying, hey, can you do this? Continuing saying no all the time just seems so counterproductive to growth and it's so difficult. But yet, those of us, especially, you know, in the startup world, you need to immerse yourself in stories of things that win and lose. Well, in all of business you do, but as I'm starting JetBuilt these last couple of years, I've had to really go to the woodshed for this area, you know, in software versus in AV integrating for so many years, and learning that it's just one of the biggest disciplines on earth is to stay focused. And I think it's not that it's any harder in our area than it is for AV integrators, but I think it's where you started, unless you're so bad at it you started, but you just kept accidentally getting it barely right that maybe you should jump into something you're stronger in, but I don't think that's going to be the case. So that's answering your question. I think overall, though, the concept of growing just to grow always frustrated me. Especially with integrators, it's one thing when you've got these corporations pushed by stakeholders, shareholders, that just simply require at all costs, go buy someone, go do something. You got to grow. I get that. It's a problem of the beast. But when you're an integrator, whether you're a small shop or you've got 20, 30, you know, people on your team and you're doing great, I feel it's sad that not enough pride is left in staying great at that and making good money, serving your clients well, and being great at that without needing to get another 30% the next year.
Okay. Mr. Tucker, we'll leave the buy people up for Mr. Depperschmidt. Cisco's done that once or twice. George, can somebody be great at several things? And the reason I ask is because there's an old adage, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. Can somebody be a master of all different aspects of AV?
Well, yes and no. And it's going to be that kind of tempered question answer, I suppose. I'll differ from Paul in a little bit because, yes, you should stick to something that you know well and be able to be focused on that as a main sales item. But as we just discussed before about the architects and about that whole new world, if you don't know how to do it and you can't take the time to learn it, then you need to bring in partners who do. And that's how you can grow in that side of it. And but then again comes that competition of, am I bringing in my competitor who knows a little bit more about two things I need to know, and where does that lead? For a small company, yes. I mean, I work for a small company, and we do lighting, and we do the HVAC, and we do the data, and we do the audio and the video portions of it. We do it fairly well, I would say. But it took a lot of effort on the principal's parts to learn it and then hand that down to the guys who are actually installing it. So they take a lot of the focus of those guys are your masters of many technologies, and they can implement those. The next step is, do you get into and selling the fixtures and all that kind of stuff? There is that need to grow your company in those directions because that's what your clients want. And if you're not going to provide it, someone else will. So it's a tight balance of being able to say, yes, I will do this, but I really do have to commit a serious amount of time to becoming a master of it.
All right. All right, Mr. Debersmith, I'm not going to ask any difficult questions about acquiring people. Cisco is a publicly held company, and I have no desire to have a call from the SEC. Yeah.
They just haven't acquired who you want them to acquire.
Well, yeah.
I think I can actually bring something to this. Actually, you bring up the example of the guys at Technical Innovations, which was Technical Industries way back when. I was actually VP of Sales at Technical Industries.
Okay. Wow.
Many, many years ago. And one of the things that we had to do during my time was we kind of had to fire customers because we had gotten to the point where we had all these salespeople out that were bringing in deals, and it was overstripping our ability for the integration part of the business to get the job done right. And we finally realized that, you know, we can do, you know, all of these poorly, or we can do these really well. And so we ended up having to say, we just can't take these jobs like this. We just don't have the capacity to do it. And so we actually consciously went through that process. And the growth is not just for growth's sake. You have to grow where you can manage it. And it was really difficult. And it was really hard to tell salespeople. We had to let some salespeople go.
I was going to say, how difficult is that conversation with the client to say, I'm sorry, I can't help you?
Yeah. Yeah, and it was the kind of things that, you know, that they were just constantly beating on you for whatever reason, you know, and it was just you could never keep them happy, and it was just, you know what, you need to find somebody that kind of works more the way you want to work. And we had people that were willing to pay the money for what we did well and focus in on them. So the real thing that we were starting to see was those companies that were willing to work with us really the way we're starting to get mad because we were getting pulled off and doing all these other little jobs.
Yeah.
And so, you know, which ones do you give up? Was it pretty easy call for us, you know, to say we're going to stick with the people over here that are really sticking with us. So, but it's a tough thing. The other thing I would mention is I think I've seen that AV is the niche. So I wouldn't go as much as to say, you know, that you have to find one part of AV. I mean, in the world that I'm in, you start to see a lot more to it. And what's happened, we alluded to it just a little while ago, was that the AV integrators have become subs to these larger data VARs who are doing phones and doing networks and doing, you know, all these other massive things inside of an enterprise or an organization. And they're bringing in these AV integrators to do what they do best. And what I'm finding is, in the years past, we expected these data VARs to build their own AV practice internally, and that has not happened. I mean, what we're starting to see is those who did backed off. You know, they realized it's like, you know what, that's not really our world. And so I've got this great relationship with some of the a lot of these AV players out there that I can bring them in. And I think it was something about competitive came up just a minute ago. Is like everybody got to play nice here. The first time that I bring you into a deal and then you jump around me, that'll be the last time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that all of those roads are very clear before you start. But it's been working out really well for the last few years. I'm seeing some really, really strong relationships.
Good.
With the AV engineers. And they love it. I mean, they're brought into the deals much earlier. They're brought into the table to talk to these architects and designers way earlier than they ever would have been in the AV space. So it's, and it developed on its own. It's not like somebody went out and, I wish I could take credit for organizing all that, but it was almost symbiotic. It almost just kind of worked.
Because the data bars had a need, had a expertise that could fill it.
Yeah, and what was weird was, you could see, you know, I think I can tell this. You know, effectively, all of our sales that used to go to the AV integrators for the video conferencing codecs and things started to go through these big data bars. And the data bar, it was kind of a simple thing when you think about it. The customer would just say, you know, I buy all of my Cisco stuff from X.
Yeah.
And they don't even care what it is. I mean, they wouldn't know a box if it fell, hit them on the head. But they would say, we buy all of our Cisco things from these guys. And so the integrators were starting to lose that sale. But then the data vars who were getting the sale said, I don't know how to do this. And so can you essentially hook me up with some of these guys who can do this work? So years ago, I actually helped create some of the relationships that are still going now.
That's awesome.
And it's, again, everybody's happy.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like everybody's okay with that. But the AV is the niche in that case. Okay. And they don't look at it from a standpoint of what part of AV, you know, to the rest of the data bar world, it's AV.
Right, AV so, is AV. Wow.
Yeah.
All right, guys. That's going to do us. Mr. Tucker, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Good, always good to be on.
Absolutely.
You can find me on Twitter at Tucker Twos. I write for several technical trade journals. Say that properly. And here at AV Nation.
All right. Very good. Mr. Depperschmidt, always good to see you, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. If anybody wants to send me something, I'm at pdeppers@cisco.com.
All right.
Reach me there.
All right. And you'll see Mr. Depperschmidt's bright and shining face at ISE.
Amsterdam. Gotta love it.
Absolutely. All right. Mr. Dexter, thank you so much, sir.
Yes. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. And I hope I was of some value to you guys. And it was a great conversation.
Absolutely.
If anybody wants to reach out to me, of course, it's paul@jetbuilt.com. And I will also see you guys at ISE.
All right, very good, very good. Are you guys exhibiting, or are you just going over to hang out?
Yeah, we're both exhibiting, and then we do a little happy hour event, which is kind of fun, and second annual this time, and a lot of other things, a lot of meetings, of course. But yeah, we're showing.
All right, very good. All right, my name is Jamal Bright. Don't follow me. Go by the website, if you would, please, avnation.tv, avnation.tv. You'll find this program and a host of others. Mr. Tucker was nice enough to mention a couple of those. Resi Week, which is our residential AV show. Basically, it's this show only covering the residential news and information. We've got Lightcast. We've got a new social media episode of our AV social that came out, EdTech, State of Control. Also have our first annual AV Nation Awards. The voting process is up and running, so take a look at that. It's on the front page, upper right-hand corner. Click on it. Let us know what you think. There's things like, you know, the most innovative product of the year, the best educator of the year. This all came from our listeners and our viewers. They gave us the people to put up there. We tabulated it and said who was the most nominated, and that's the result right there. So avnation.tv, avnation.tv. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for watching. This has been AV Week.